Yo, yo. I'm Jovan Buha. He's Jason Timpf, and we are two-thirds of the Lakers Collective. No Trevor Lane today, so we're both going to be assuming some more usage, trying not to turn the ball over too much or take some bad shots. But Jason, how are you doing? How's your All-Star break been going?
It's going good, man. It's good to see you. You did way better on your intro than I did. So I think we can all agree that I am... I am dead last in hosting capabilities.
You're a sniper. You're a sniper.
I'm a play finisher. I'm not a setup guy. I'm a play finisher. But yeah, it's going good. I've got a buddy coming in town today, and he leaves on Sunday, him and his wife. And then from there, I don't have any company or any trips literally till after Summer League. It's like straight grind time for, what is that, four straight months or whatever it is. You know the deal. You know what it's like this time of year.
Yeah, I'm going to be traveling a little bit. I think I'm going to try to make it to wherever the Lakers are in the playoffs, but you know, whatever the matchup is. But yeah, probably go to a couple more road regular season games and then travel for however long the playoffs go. But for today's purposes, we are going to be getting into the role players, the supporting cast. Earlier this week, we graded the Lakers' big three of Luka, Austin, and LeBron. Today, we're going to be getting into everybody else in the supporting cast. So first up is DeAndre Ayton, who has, I think, like overall lived up to the contract and been a positive value for the Lakers as their starting center. But starting in late December, we started to see some of the warts that Phoenix and Portland fans had been talking about all offseason in terms of the motor, the rebounding, not trying as hard when not being as involved offensively. He's been benched in several fourth quarters entirely. He's also had several games where he's been pulled in crunch time for either Jackson Hayes or for LA to go with a centerless look. So starting off with DA, what is your grade for DeAndre?
So I actually went pretty negative here. I gave him C minus, and I think part of the reason
comes down to
a simple kind of idea that with great power comes great responsibility, right? Like, I understand that there was a discounted contract here, but part of the reason why I went negative here is you were handed the keys to a very important job, which is starting center for the Los Angeles Lakers. Not just that, but starting center alongside a Luka Doncic team. It's one of the most important roles on the team. And specifically, you know, to the point you're making, there are some really strong markers for Ayton this year in some key areas. So for instance, there's been a lot of big statistical performances that have greatly outperformed his contract. There was a stretch to start the season where he was flat out good for quite a while. There's some really strong play type data. He's been really good and in roles. He's making 66% of his shots there for 1.22 points per possession as a role man. That's 72nd percentile. He's finished really well on cuts, 74% on cuts. He's had 41 offensive rebound putbacks this year. That's really impressive. Like, there's strong markers for him there. Even when he's caught the ball in the post, when Ayton's shot the ball in the post, he shot 59%, you know, a lot of like deep seals and things like that. But ultimately, do we trust Ayton to close a game? Do we trust Ayton to be able to play a serious role in a playoff series? And I think the answer is no on both of those. And he's been pretty bad in a lot of their big games. And so, you know, when you really get down to it, this is a guy that was given the keys to a huge opportunity as the starting center for this team. And I would argue that he has failed to be able to fill that role adequately. And we spent half of the deadline conversations talking about whether or not we should be looking for a different center. And so that to me was kind of the thing that skewed him more towards the negative side. And also, lastly, the team's been better with him off the floor. He's been a bad plus minus guy for them this year.
All fair points. I went a little higher. This was, so I said with the star grading that LeBron was the toughest guy for me to grade just because of all the variables involved with trying to assess LeBron's performance. I think Ayton for me was the toughest role player to grade because we also talked about last show, like, the contract matters, right? And I think he's undeniably been worth the $8 million that the Lakers signed him to. Like, he has given them in the totality of the season starting center level production. But it obviously goes deeper than that. And for me, the positive side, I look at the overall numbers and just like the overall production he's given them for the season. I look at the efficiency, as you were talking about. This has been his most efficient season around the basket, in the mid range, and with those little floaters and hook shots and like the 3 to 10 foot range. And then I also look at the contract. The minuses have been, he's clearly lost the trust of the coaching staff for the past going on like month and a half, almost 2 months here, where basically like the first mistake he makes, or the first sign of him sort of retreating in terms of his physicality, his engagement, his activity, JJ is just like, we're pulling the plug here and we're going with Jackson Moore, we're going with Maxey, or we're going small. And so like that fall off, and I it still doesn't sit right with me. I said it at the time, and I will continue to just, you know, kind of stand firm on this. Like, I really did not like the discourse coming out of the initial benchings with him, where it was like, oh, well, we're not involved. Like, JJ kind of fell on the sword there and took the blame for him. But it was like, we knew from the offseason, the job was to come in, set screens, roll hard, finish lobs, get offensive rebounds, protect the basket, protect the defensive glass. That is the starting center role for the Lakers. And if you're now going to start complaining about, I'm not getting the ball enough, I need more touches, this and that, and that's going to make you stop protecting the rim and stop boxing out and stop rolling hard and screening hard, that's where I have a larger issue here. So I think, again, like in the vacuum of the contract, I think has been solid. But for me, I guess I hadn't said my grade yet. I'm giving him a B minus, but it is a B minus that is trending toward your C minus, where for me, he was probably an A or A minus the first like 20 to 25 yeah. games of the season. It's probably been like a D plus, C minus, D plus for me post. Like I would say like Christmas time, kind of around then. So he'll still put up the numbers, but to your point, and I've talked about this as well, like look at his performances in the biggest games against the best big men. And there's a stark drop off against those types of teams in those games. And it's a lot of, we're playing Brooklyn, we're playing New Orleans, we're playing Memphis. Okay, I'm going to get my 20 and 15. And that's sort of carrying his averages. So real drop off there in terms of points, rebounds, field goal percentage in the big matchups. And also just in general, since late December, he's averaging 11 points and 8 rebounds. And I just don't think that's good enough for a guy with his skill set and his talent. So, I think we're both in agreement to the degree that he's underperformed, certainly for the past like 7 weeks, I would say.
Yeah, I have one last thing I want to add. First of all, this comment from Civic Citizen is making me laugh. I give Ayton an A for ain't him.
Well, and like that might, I mean, I don't know, is he going to opt in? Like, I don't know where that market, I mean, maybe some team talks themselves into him as like a backup center, and you could argue a good backup center is worth like 12 to 15 million. So maybe some team gives him a little bit of a pay raise, but he might be opting in with the way things are trending.
I mean, to put it very simply, if he doesn't have any sort of other offer on the table, he will opt in because he like anybody else, we would take the guaranteed, you know, whatever it is, $7 or $8 million. So there's three things, you know, that this is just kind of my last kind of take on the Ayton situation. There's three things with him that drive me crazy. One, he just doesn't run the floor. And he's so big and has such great natural ability that it sticks out like a sore thumb on the screen when you see him jogging up the floor in transition. That drives me crazy. You want to talk about why Jackson has found more favor with the coaching staff? It's because Jackson runs. Jackson runs the damn floor. And even Maxey as well, who I know we're not going to get to today. But that's the first piece of it. The second piece of it is his angles in drop coverage looks. He always has an open stance and always seems to be like a step late in his drop coverage looks. And so he's constantly out of position and like picking up fouls as guys kind of turn the corner around his shoulder. And he'll just in general fail to protect the rim to the way he's capable of because he's just a second slow. And again, that open stance when he's in his drop, whereas if you're squared up, it's just that much harder for the player to turn the corner on you. The last thing that drives me crazy with him, and this is in general just one of my favorite kind of traits of a basketball player, this was the thing that caused me to love Jordan Goodwin, is scrappiness. Like, basketball often is ugly, you know, especially when you get to the postseason. I thought the Oklahoma City game down the stretch was a perfect example of this. Like, nothing, there is no clean catch. There is no clean rebound. There is no clean drive. There is no clean post-entry. Everything is getting tipped and you're getting grabbed and guys are scrapping for the loose ball. And there's a certain amount of like scrappy, feisty fight that you have to succeed in those environments. And DeAndre Ayton is just devoid of that specific skill. He's not a scrapper. He will high point the ball and he can rebound really well because of his physical traits, but anything down low when he brings the ball down, I just don't trust him to hang on to it and like, or to win loose ball battles that are kind of below his vertical plane, right? And so just in general, I wish he was a lot more scrappy. And those are the three things that have just driven me crazy with him this year.
To your point on the defensive side, if you look at the lineup data, and I just did a deep dive on my channel on the Lakers' big three and the lineup data around those three guys. And like one thing I've touched on, you know, when we talk about the starting group and whatnot, has been the LeBron, Luka, Rui trio. There's just too much defensive overlap in terms of strengths and weaknesses and not enough strengths collectively with that trio. So the lineup data defensively has been really bad with those three on the floor. But even if you take Rui off, and that's what we've been advocating for, has been put Marcus in there or even put Jake in there as the fifth guy. If you actually look at the LeBron, Luka, DA defensive lineup, that has been basically just as bad as the, and you know, some of it is like Rui and DA were out there for a lot of those minutes up to this point. So there is some overlap just between DA and Rui there. But even taking Rui out of the equation, the lineup data with DA as the center. And so I think this is something the Lakers are going to have to figure out here over the final 28 games is I think politically he's going to continue to start. I don't see him losing his job to Jackson Hayes or Maxi Kleba or LA just like starting small, but you might have to shrink. Like already they kind of have to stagger LeBron and Luka to a degree just because of some of the defensive stuff with those two and the lineup data up to this point, even going back to last year. But I also think it's like you got to be careful how much you're putting DA out there with those guys because there's too many times where it's a layup line or it's wide open corner threes and they're sort of bad at both, like protecting the rim and getting out to shooters. That's a bad combination that LA is going to have to figure out. But let's move on to the next player here, Rui Hachimura, who is someone we have talked about a lot on this show and his role on this team and his spot in the starting lineup. He has moved to a bench role and I think has thrived in that bench role and basically lived up to exactly what the Lakers have needed. But what's your grade for Rui? Excuse me.
So I think, you know, I kind of looked at the role player weighting of the grades relative to their salaries. And I think you'll see that reflected in specifically guys like Rui and guys like Vando. For a guy who makes $18 million, for a serious team, you expect a certain amount of two-way play that I think is missing with Rui. There is value. Rui's been a positive plus-minus guy. One of the big reasons why is he's one of the few guys on the team that can knock down a catch-and-shoot three. I think that as I really start to dive into it, there's a pretty big disparity between how many unguarded catch-and-shoot threes he takes and how many guarded catch-and-shoot threes he takes and how much his percentages fall when he faces contests. And the reason why that matters is there's just not that many wide-open threes to be had when you're playing against great defenses. They're almost always under some kind of duress. They're almost always a little bit rushed. And so there's one, I feel like as a guy in a contract year, he's been picky about what kind of threes he wants to take. Because he's an over 50% catch and shoot shooter when he's wide open from the 3-point line, you just feel like it's going in. And so he's kind of juicing his percentages a bit by passing up on a lot of those contested ones when what the team really needs is specifically guys like him and LeBron, the taller guys that can actually knock down catch and shoot threes, although LeBron struggled this year, is those guys to take some of the more moderately contested types of threes. And then in general, there's not like he could be a little bit of a ball stopper, not the best kind of like make a read in the middle of the floor type of player. And then obviously on the defensive end of the floor, there's a lot to be desired. So like if Rui was on the same kind of contract that like Jake LaRavia or Marcus Smart was on, he'd be getting an A- for me or a B+ at least. But given how much money he makes and how on a team of this construct, you're hoping for something closer to like a Jaden McDaniels type of two-way athlete at the forward position, I'm giving Rui a B because he's not quite performing up to his contract for me.
I'm even a little bit lower than you. I have him at a B-. I agree with everything you said, but I mean, he's the third highest paid player on the team, and I don't think
he makes more than Austin.
He makes more than Austin, and I don't think he, like in a vacuum, he has lived up to that contract. I think he's been closer to like a $10 to $12 million player with his production, and there's been some real slippage. I'm an analytics guy, and I do, you know, take the numbers at face value to a degree, but a lot of the defensive metrics paint him as like the worst defender on the team and one of the worst defenders in the league. I don't know if I'd go like that far, but I do think last year to me, he was like an average-ish to slightly below average defender. This year, I think he's been a pretty bad defender. And again, a lot of metrics put him in like that 10th percentile defensively. I don't know if I'd go like that far, but I think he's somewhere in like the 25th to 30th percentile. And last year, to me, he was more of like a 45th to 50th percentile type defender. So I think there's been some real slippage on that end with the engagement, the awareness. Feels like he's constantly, I mean, if you just set a back screen against Rui, like something good is going to happen when he's out there. The rebounding has really, like his minutes are basically the same as last year, and the rebounding has dipped about a rebound and a half per, you know, 100 possessions or per 36 minutes, depending on what you want to look at. And then also the finishing around the basket has dipped in a real way. I don't know how much I put on Rui versus like just the primary ball handlers and the coaching staff. But like, remember last year how many back cuts he was getting and how much of a weapon that was for LA, and like those baseline cuts where he would just get, a back cut for a dunk or a layup. He's just not really getting that as well. So you see like there's been a real dip in his rim frequency attempts, and just also combine that with the shooting percentage decrease there. And I just think like across the board, he's basically been a worse player than last year. Outside of, to your point, I think like the shooting has been slightly better by a few percentage points, and the mid-range shooting has been awesome. So like, I think at this point, he's basically become a stretch big who does like little else. He doesn't defend, he doesn't pass, he doesn't rebound. So I compared him to Duncan Robinson earlier in the season, and I kind of felt bad about that. But like, I think Duncan Robinson plays harder than he does, and has probably been better defensively than him. So I think for the big thing for me, though, is the contract, where again, to your point, if he was in like the Marcus Jake range, I think I would have a similar grade with him like as those guys. But I think for the expectation, like I think on paper, he was supposed to be their fourth best player this year. Yep. And you could argue he's been that, but I think Marcus has been better. You could maybe argue DA has been better in totality. Jake is in the mix. Vando recently with his ascension through like mid-December. I think there's several guys you can make a case for have been like just as good, if not better than Rui. And for the salary that he's making, I just don't think he's quite lived up to that.
Yeah, so to your point about the cuts, the stat is actually crazy. So last year, he made a basket on a cut 1.0 times per game. This year, 0.4. So less than half as frequently as he did last year. One random, like, super impressive stat from him, he has been nails on those short little pull-up jumpers. He's 65% on twos inside of 17 feet. On all pull-up twos, so all off-the-dribble twos, 59%. So, like, that's the thing, is, like, there's...
The shooting's incredible. The mid-range and the three-point shooting.
Like, yeah. If he could piece some of these other things together, he is a $25 million player. He just struggles with that. And, like, I mean, that's been, you know, trust is the ultimate thing that really drives whether or not a player has value. I would argue more than any sort of statistical performance, it's like, is this guy a playoff rotation player, is going to dictate whether or not a guy's going to get a good amount of money in the open market. And like, again, like the rebounding fall off is like insane. Actually, if you dig into it on a per 36 minute basis, which will just factor in how much his role changes, his first year in LA, 7.6 rebounds per 36 minutes. The last two seasons, 5.7, 5.8. This year, down to 4.2. And like, again, some of that is, I would argue some of that too is like Luka Doncic gets so many defensive rebounds, and there's a certain amount of like just the amount of available rebounds that are getting grabbed. But like, just in general,
Ayton's a good rebounder too.
And Ayton's a good rebounder too, but I'd argue so is Anthony
Davis. But he's played a lot more at the four though this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's
looking
true.
At his, like looking at compared to last year, he played They had 74% of his minutes at the four. Now it's up to 91%. So like he's theoretically playing closer to the basket. And I just think like it also like the Lakers have been a solid defensive rebounding team, but in a lot of their losses, they get killed on the offensive glass. And I think in those games, that's where you see the lack of rebounding, the lack of awareness defensively really show up with him.
Yeah, and to your point, like, yeah, they're seventh in defensive rebound percentage for a team that has Luka and Rui and LeBron and Ayton. They really should be a top three or four type of defensive rebounding team. It just, like, we're being nitpicky here, guys, but, like, he's making $18 million. Like, there's, like, you're in a tier of player where you're, like, once you get north of $15 million a year, you're expecting high-level role player. Like, really, really good, like, should be a bona fide starting caliber player for a championship level team. And that just hasn't been the case. And to your point, yeah, the Lakers have given up 31% of their own of opponents' misses have been rebounded by their opponent in losses. So there has been a defensive rebounding problem in losses.
Let's move on to Marcus Smart. What's your grade for him?
So Marcus, I gave a B+. What I'm looking at with Marcus is he, and I think this kind of applies to Jake LaRavia as well, but both of them are guys that I consider to be like the mediocre role player version of a Swiss Army knife. Like they can just do a little bit of everything. They can guard a bunch of different positions. They scrap. They have a little bit of ability to put the ball on the floor, a little bit of ability to shoot. There's just a little bit of everything that you're getting from these guys. I think the biggest thing that continues to drag me down with both guys is their inability to knock down wide open threes. Both of these guys, both him and Jake, as we'll get to later, have just been so bad at these wide open, just dare you to shoot types of threes. Marcus has got 103 of them this year and he's made 34. And one of the things we've seen is a lot of those misses are barely grazing the front of the rim. And so like, again, for a discounted player that you're getting for a portion of the MLE, I give him a B+ because of just the overall winning impact. And I think that shows in most of their lineups, like most of the best Laker lineups that that have had success in the plus minus category have involved Marcus Smart. The team is 7 points better per 100 possessions when he's on versus off. That's why he's getting a B+ for me. But like for either of those guys, just with the types of quality looks that they're getting with these huge advantages, they just can't put the ball in the basket. And that's what's holding him back for me.
I also had a B+ for Marcus. The positives, you mentioned it. He leads the team in plus minus and on off differential among the primary role players. So the Lakers are, and actually he's one of two players with the other one being Austin, who the Lakers are actually better on both sides of the ball. Yep. So like with Luka, it's the offensive side. With LeBron, it's the offensive side. With DA, it's the offensive side. With Rui, it's the offensive side. Like, and then Vando, it's defense. LaRavia, it's defense, right? So several of these guys are, we've talked about it a lot, like one-way players are sort of the makeup of this roster. Marcus, to me, has been their best two-way player. I think, like, I want it to be Jake, but it just has not, he's not been able to put it together offensively. I also look at the defensive impact just in general. Like there's a different energy with this group when Marcus is out there, when Vando is out there. And I think he sparks something. Like I've compared him to DFS and that transaction that the Lakers made last year really just changed their season. DFS was a plus minus monster and the Lakers were just always better with him on the floor. Same thing with Marcus, where even if he's not making shots, even if he is turning the ball over, the Lakers are consistently winning the minutes with him on the floor. The minuses, of course, are the 3-point shooting, the turnovers, the shot selection. I've liked, like he has been a big part of their transition uptick and LA playing a little bit faster or being more opportunistic in transition with some of the early offense reads. And he's had stretches where he'll just like grab a rebound and just go coast to coast and draw a foul or something. He's been grifting more. That's been another development with him. But like it could also be a little bit too much of he'll call his own number. He'll you know, drive into a thicket of arms and just get the ball blocked or stripped or try to grift his way to the free throw line and it doesn't happen. So you take like he is a no yes player where sometimes that there'll be like the shots or the plays where you really don't want him to do it, but he ends up doing it. And then but like I think a lot of their big wins or you know bigger wins have been Marcus hit some big shot, like, you know, the Denver game, he hit some big shots, the Philly game, like he's hit some big shots in fourth quarters. And he is, to me, a big game player where if we're thinking about like how these guys are going to scale into the playoffs, I have a lot of confidence in Marcus. Overall, to me, he's been their fourth best player on the season. There are certainly some drawbacks and things he could do better, but this dude's making $5.1 million. Like that's another thing here, right? Where we're talking about contracts and what everyone's providing, like, this type of production and impact on a $5 million deal, that's stellar. I think he was the best signing of the offseason for LA.
Yeah, to your point, we talked about this in a previous pod, but the Lakers are 4-8 when he doesn't hit a three. You know, like almost every big win the Lakers have had this year has involved not just threes, but big fourth quarter threes from Marcus. Marcus has just been a big time kind of crunch time guy for them. I'm glad you mentioned the motor stuff. I think that's huge. I think Jake deserves credit for this too. Both of those two, this will not come as any surprise to Lakers fans, but they lead the team in deflections. Both of them get about 3 deflections per game. Jake in particular has been great getting loose balls as well. The play type data, this is the fascinating part. You talked about the random little one-on-ones. Marcus has strong play type data this year. So he's run 39 ISOs and post-ups, so 39 one-on-ones, and he's generated 46 points. That's a really efficient play type for the Lakers. And he's actually run quite a few ball screens. He's run 128 ball screens for the Lakers this year, and he's at 1.04 points per possession, including passes, which is the 74th percentile. So he's done a pretty decent job of converting his on-ball opportunities that he's had, which I would argue is just like found money in this construct of the team. Again, like among all the role players that I have, he was, you know, Luke Kennard, I'm going to set to the side because he's only played 4 games. And spoiler alert, he's the only A that I gave out today. So we'll talk about Luke in a little bit. But the only two guys that I viewed like relative to their contract as B+ or better were him and Jackson. So to give you an idea, like that's, I think overwhelmingly the role player core has been a disappointment for the Lakers this year. But him in particular, he's been one of the rare bright spots.
Speaking of Jake, let's talk about him. What was your grade for him?
I gave him a C+. There's some really interesting like data with him in terms of how well the team performs when he's on the floor. They are 9 points worse per 100 possessions when he's on versus off. I don't think that's all his fault. I think that there is some just some kind of like lineup weirdness there going on. Again, he is one of their higher motor guys. He's a guy who's near the top of the team in deflections. He's near the top of the team in recovering loose balls. He has the ability to put the ball on the floor a little bit and make some things happen off the bounce. But just, again, this is a guy that has a bad combination of gets left wide open and can't make the shots. Like there's, I would argue, guys that get guarded actually bring more value than their percentages anyway. And Jake LaRavia this season, 124 wide open catch and shoot threes, and he's made 41, which is less than a third. And that just continues to be the kind of thing that hurts the team. And he's also a guy that will not shoot when he's contested at all. This is crazy. 163 catch and shoots, 124 of them have been wide open. Even Rui takes a higher percentage of his catch and shoot looks when he's contested. So like he's always looking to like put the ball on the floor in those situations. And there's some positive there. He'll put the ball on the floor and he'll make a read here or there. But when he attacks a closeout and shoots a 2, he's 18 for 46. That's just 39%. And so like Jake is one of those guys where same sort of thing. Like he's such a scrapper and he's such a high IQ guy who's always in the right spot, who doesn't make mistakes. I think he's shown some real defensive utility, specifically guarding bigger forwards. He's just a very good positional defender that can absorb contact and get good contests on pull-up jump shots. If he could just hit 38% of his catch and shoot threes, he's a $15 million player. And that really is the main thing that I think is holding up his development. And when he can figure that out, I think he will become a guy who can play a dead serious role on a championship team.
As you were speaking, the Lakers announced that Lon Rosen is going to be replacing Tim Harris as the new president of business operations. So we had some breaking news there.
C plus is my grade, by the way. I forgot to actually.
You said C plus. So I'm a little bit higher on Jake, and maybe this is a more contract weighted. I gave him a B, and maybe I'm weighing like the defensive playmaking and motor a little bit too much, but I think, like, you know, to your point, the lineup data has not been good with him. So that's, I think, a big blemish on his resume compared to some of the other role players. But I think outside of Marcus, he is the closest thing to a two-way player among the role players. Like, he's been around average-ish, I would say, on both sides of the ball. And in some matchups, I think has been really, like, I think he's defended Kawhi the best of any Laker this yep. year, and has had some
we'll see that impressive again tomorrow night.
Yeah, and he's had some impressive stretches against him. I think there's just a level of versatility where he can, as you said earlier, like the jack of all trades, he can do a little bit of everything, where he can dribble a little bit. He can, he can post up. He can shoot on some nights. He can rebound. He can pass. He can defend multiple positions. So I think that has been an important skill set. And then there's like a motor and physicality aspect to him that, again, kind of outside of Marcus and to a lesser degree, I would say, like, I guess Vando too, like those three just bring a level of constant physicality. And sometimes that leads to getting into foul trouble, which the Lakers' best defenders can all kind of struggle with sometimes. But like, I just think he plays with, he's always in the thick of the paint and the fray. And like, he's diving on the ground for loose balls. He's always in the mix there in a way that I think the Lakers have desperately needed from some of the role players. Now, to your point, this blew my mind. So I just did on my show, five big questions for the Lakers in the stretch run here. And one of the big things was, can the Lakers shooters stabilize? And so I looked at the catch and shoot 3-point percentage for each of their seven perimeter guys. I didn't include Vando. So it was everybody but Vando, DA, and Jackson. And I looked at their catch and shoot 3-point percentage this season compared to the past three seasons. So just comparing it to have a little bit of a sample size of like how they performed over a multi-year look. And Jake, over the past 3 years, has been a 38.8% catch and shoot guy, this year at 32.7%. So that's the second biggest drop off in the rotation behind LeBron, who's actually dropped off from 41% to 34. But like, that's a huge drop off that, to your point, if he's even like league average there or slightly above and closer to his norm, we're talking about a totally different player and probably the favorite, in my opinion, to be the fifth starter. But he just has not been able to hit shots consistently. I think he also struggles through the, like, he'll have the game where he goes 1-for-4, and then the next game he'll take like 1-3 because he does not, like, he can get in his head a little bit too much, and his shooting performance can affect, I think, his overall play offensively to a degree that I think can be detrimental. So you're kind of talking me into maybe like a B minus here, but I think based on, he's making $6 million. Like, I think that's been a fine contract, and especially for what this group needs, I think he's been their second best two-way player and overall their third best defender.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting case for positive regression there. You know, I've thought that too, Jovan, because like, there's been a combination of the obvious fact that Jake has shot the ball better in the past. And then two, Jake has openly talked about this in his post-game pressers. He's like, I'm just as frustrated as you guys are. Like, I'm doing everything I can. And like, I mean, I've been in a shooting slump before. I've told you guys about this. I had a stretch the year I was playing NAIA up in Phoenix, where in a single week I missed 22 consecutive threes. So like, I know what it's like to be in a shooting slump and to be like working your ass off behind the scenes and to be trying everything you can to try to get it right. So like, I sympathize, but ultimately, like, I just keep waiting for that breakthrough and it just keeps not happening. And so I'm hopeful. I'm like you. I'm looking at that and I'm hoping for some positive regression. And to your point, like, if there is a version of the Lakers that can do some damage in the postseason, it's Marcus and Jake turning into high 30s catch and shoot guys. Like, if they can do that, all of a sudden both of those guys become two pretty damn valuable like two-way players. I do think that the big difference, like, if you ask me, like, why is Jake a C plus but Marcus is a B plus? And it really is just that overall offensive value. Like, Marcus has just, one, hit so many big threes this year, and two, shown some real on-ball potential. Really, when you look at Jake, he's been bad offensively in just about every play type offensively except for post-ups. That's been the one thing where it's like, okay, when Jake has been able to kind of bully smaller players around the basket, he's been pretty efficient, but his ball screens haven't been good. His ISOs haven't been good. His spot-up possessions haven't been good. The percentages are just so low that like it's kind of undercutting some of his impact. And we've seen games like most recently that I think it was – what was the game where he got benched for Luke at the final couple minutes?
Was it OKC?
I think it was OKC. Like there are times where it becomes like straight up deflating to the team, these like completely unguarded threes that he can't hit.
Yeah, looking at like starting with the – since the New York game, he's sort of been floating in that – high teens to low to mid 20s range, where before that he had had a lot of games in the high 20s into the 30s. Obviously some of that was due to injury, like Rui was out. You had a stretch where LeBron, Luka, different guys were out, but he seems like he's settled into a smaller role, and it looks like he's the guy that's going to move to the bench when the Lakers shift the starting group back. Let's go to Vando. What's your grade for? We'll go through Vando, Jackson, and Luke a little bit quicker, and then we'll get into the Q&A here. But what's your grade for Vando?
Yeah, you know what's interesting about this is like once again, it's the contract. Like if Vando was on a vet minimum, or if he was on like Marcus's deal or Jake's deal, I think I probably give him a B plus or an A minus. But this is a guy who's making $37 million over the next three seasons, and so even though the way that I would kind of characterize Vando's season is I think he's been absolutely awesome situationally. And what I mean by that is like when he's on those lineups with LeBron, those like early fourth quarter lineups, those early second quarter lineups, he's not just good, he's great. Like, and he's been a huge part of the success of those groups. But basically every single lineup with him on the floor without LeBron, he struggled in. And part of the reason why is because, like we've talked about in the past, Austin and Luka both represent very much a spread pick and roll style of basketball, which like kind of puts you very much in a slow down half court type of vibe. And it puts you into strictly play finishing position. These LeBron groups, they're more defensive focused, which Vando deserves a lot of credit for. They operate in transition more, where Vando's actually an above average open court player. And it keeps more movement in the half court, which keeps Vando from being in those standstill situations. I want to give him another feather in his cap here. I actually think the shooting has been pretty impressive. He's been stuck in some like bad catch and shoot situations where it's like a late shot clock or like a grenade gets thrown his way and he has to take a tough three, and he's struggled. And you could tell like he's 2 for 19 this year on guarded catch and shoot. So when he's rushed at all in the corners, it's probably not going in. But when he's unguarded, like when he's standing still in the corners, 22 for 60, 37%. And like I actually, as a fan now, when Vando's got like a wide open corner three, I'm like, this might go in. You know, like I have like a little bit of like an optimism in that specific spot. Like to put it very simply, on wide open corner threes, Vando's been better than Marcus and he's been better than Jake. So like that goes to show you just, you know, how much value that has brought. And I mean, Vando's going to set a career high for threes made this year. I think he only needs to make 6 more in order to pass his previous career high that year that he split between, I think it was Minnesota and Utah, if I remember correctly. But anyway, like overall, again, like very impactful, specifically in the LeBron-led groups. The LeBron and Vando groups are plus 11 points per 100 possessions. They are performing extremely well, but there's situationally, he's not very good in certain types of lineups. He can't close games. And that's where you start to go like $37 million over the next three seasons. That's what I ended up landing with Vando at a B minus.
We are in agreement. I think for what his role is and what the Lakers need from him, I'm with you to your earlier point where I'm probably in like a B plus A minus range. I think the biggest thing is the contract. He is making the same amount of money as right there behind Austin, but was right there with like, I mean, the Gabe Maxey contracts. That's actually maybe a a feather in Vando's cap, but like it's just not a good contract. Where I do think I've talked about this before, but like sometimes when I'm evaluating a contract, I'm like, how much would this player get on the open market? I think he would have been a minimum player until recently. Maybe with this stretch here he's had since December, that would be closer to like some team will use the taxpayer MLE and he'd be like in that $5-6 million range. But I would say in general, he is the guy that like the rest of the league views most differently. Oh no. My camera. Okay. 1 second.
You're good. We can still hear you.
All right. You guys, at least you guys can still hear me. but now we got
a little sideways angle. There we go.
Yeah. I just got a new camera and, having some camera issues right now, but, with Vando, I think like based on the contract, that's where it drops it for me from like a B plus A minus range into like a B minus. But to your point on the shooting here, now what's funny is like, it feels like he is shooting better. And to your point, I think on the unguarded threes, he's been better, but he's actually shooting 30% on corner threes, which is 8% lower than last year and would be his lowest percentage since 2022. So like, I agree that it feels like there's been an uptick in the shooting with him and you have more confidence in it, but the results have not necessarily been there from like a corner three perspective, which is basically the only threes he is taking. 93% of his threes are corner threes. The biggest difference though has been, to your point, like the uptick in actual three-point frequency, where I'm pulling it up here. His three-point frequency has gone from 26% last year to 43% this year. So he's nearly doubled it and you know, had a marked improvement there. So I think with Vando, the biggest thing is just confidence and can he play confidently and not lose his confidence offensively, because the finishing has been better this year. That was something I was on him going into the season. The three-point shooting, to your point, like the frequency at least has been up, and when he's unguarded, he's making them. So, I mean, I think really the only thing holding him back is the contract.
Yeah, I would argue he's been one of the biggest bright spots of this recent run as well. Like, I mean, the season in many ways turned around when he re-entered the rotation. I have mostly good things to say, but I mean, there's a very specific reason why you basically couldn't trade Vando at this deadline. It's because he's on a bad contract. Everything that he brings is a lot, but it's not enough to justify the amount.
You had to attach a first round pick to get off of him.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That would bring him to like neutral value.
Yeah. And there have been, again, like he's having a good season, but like there have been seasons where he hasn't looked good. And so what's ended up happening is if you're another team, you're looking at that and you're like, okay, right now this seems fine, but what if I'm paying him, you know, $13 million next season and he's having a year where he's hitting 17% of his threes and like he really doesn't fit with my stars? And so that's where it gets tricky. And again, like guys, like when we're talking about a team that, you know, had legitimate championship aspirations coming into the season. And so a lot of these conversations are in the context of a team trying to compete, and every single one of these role players, their flaws, they shine more as you increase the level of competition and the stakes.
All right. What about Jackson?
Jackson, I gave a B+. And we can go, we can go quickly on these last couple guys. Jackson, to me, it's the motor, just his willingness to run the floor. He's improved in several key areas. He's put on some muscle. He's gotten better at using verticality without fouling. This has shown in like just him being a better plus minus guy than DeAndre Ayton has been as well. He's not perfect. I think he's still just a backup center by any measure, but I think he's become like a completely serviceable backup center. It's been a position that I haven't worried about this year, which is a credit to him. And that's why among all of the key rotation guys, again, not counting Luke because he has only played 4 games, among all the key rotation guys, he tied for the best grade for me with Marcus at a B+.
We're in agreement here. I have a B+ for him. I think the finishing has been a little better this season, even compared to last season. I think the defense, a big thing with him has been fouling less. The verticality has been better. And I just think he's less mistake prone. Like I think there's been an extra level of trust with him. I still think he is prone to these crash outs where he's had fewer of them this year than in seasons past, but like he will have the stretch where he tries to contest with verticality, picks up a foul, is mad at the ref, is jawing at the ref the entire possession back down. Then he'll go pick up an offensive foul, and then he's like borderline about to get a technical foul. So that version of Jackson is still there. It's not as there as frequently as the past couple of seasons. I think we have to mention like the suspension with the Wizards mascot and just like how dumb of a situation that was. And like, not a smart move by him. And then I think there's also just an element of he's very paint bound. And I wonder like how that translates into the playoffs when you have the Lakers supporting cast is pretty shaky overall from a shooting perspective. Then you also have two paint bound centers and another paint bound wing in Vando. Like, and that's not really a Jackson criticism. It's just sort of a reality of like he's probably lower on the pecking order than some of those guys in terms of just their overall impact. So he's a guy that like I just wonder how much he can actually play in like a conference semifinals, conference finals type series. But for a vet minimum contract, like, or you know, he's making slightly more than that, but basically a vet minimum contract, he's been an awesome value.
Yep, I totally agree. And your good point about the emotion, I've noticed that too. Like he's got much better habits than he did in previous seasons, but like just old habits die hard. And every once in a while, there'll be an emotional flare up. Pale Fox says, to be fair, Jovan and Jason have also crashed out last this year. That's true.
It's true.
I had a meltdown after the Miami Heat loss last year where I literally got on my show.
I remember that one.
I was like, I'm sick of these guys. Like these guys are not serious.
And then final one here, Luke Kennard. I think you said he got an A. Is that correct?
Yeah, I got him at an A, and the reasoning here is very simple. I just think he brings such a specific skill set that this team so desperately needs, and we haven't even seen him play alongside Luka either, but just on a team that doesn't have anybody that can hit a shot, he can hit a shot, and one of the things that's really stood out to me is just he's a very good all-around offensive off-ball player. Like, he's good at driving closeouts, he's good at making additional reads, he's good at, like, relocations and just all those like little things that can kind of grease the wheels of a half court offense on a team that's so devoid of offensive skill among its role player core. It just shines. It's one of those things where I could see Luke Kennard in a different system. And I mean, we even saw this in Atlanta where it's just not as valuable, but in this particular system, in this particular roster construct, I think he's extremely valuable. And then when you really start to dig into it, like, he's essentially just filling Gabe Vincent's slot in the payroll. I like that to me is a huge upgrade. So I gave him an A, but again, only four games.
Yeah. I mean, I'd maybe give him like an A. I was going to give him an incomplete, but if I'm forced to grade, I'll give him an A minus. To your point, the shooting, the gravity, the ball handling, like attacking closeouts, the passing, the IQ, like he's been plug and play. It's been a seamless fit offensively. Now I think, similar to DA and Jackson and Rui, those three guys to me are like the bellwethers for the Lakers offense of if DA and Jackson are getting the lobs, getting the dump offs, if Rui and Luke are getting the open threes, that means there's a certain level of zip and ball movement. And like the Lakers are playing with a verve offensively. When those guys are getting 2 3-point attempts and the big men are getting like 2 collective lobs, that's when I think that the offense is more in the mud. But with Luke, we've yet to see like the avalanche game where he just hits like, you know, 5, 6, 7 threes. But I think that'll be coming at some point. The only like nitpicks I'll have is like similar to Rui, honestly, and this is just, I guess, a Lakers thing maybe to some degree, is he, well, I think this has followed Luke for a while, but like he will pass up some decent looks because he wants like a great look, or he wants to try and find a great look for a teammate. Like, I think there's times where he just needs to let it fly. And then defensively, I think in the OKC and San Antonio games, San Antonio game was kind of in its own universe, but like, I think we saw some of the smarter, better teams pick on him specifically when he was out there. And I think that's going to be something that the Lakers have to navigate, because already they're trying to protect the big three. They have several guys in the rotation that they're trying to protect. Now you add in Luke. I just think at some point it tips the scales where it's like, they're just not good enough defensively.
Nope. I totally agree. Nothing to add.
All right, we are going to take a quick break for the sponsor of today's show, Sleeper. Shout out to Sleeper. Let me get this comment off the screen here first. Shout out to Sleeper. Appreciate you guys, and we'll be back in about 30 seconds.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
All right. We are back and we are ready to get into the Q&A here. First one from Ryan Lucas. Thank you for the super chat. Thoughts on the Lon Rosen hire, Magic's former agent and Dodger guy of late. I don't buy this Rob for 5 years stuff. Writing is on the wall. Playoffs make or break for Rob. Genie slash Rob power into future overstated. And he put power in quotes. What do you think?
I think this is mostly for you. I don't really know much about Lon Rosen or much about. I know that when we're talking about the business side for the Lakers, it's not as involved in basketball operations either. So you could probably speak more to this one than I could.
Yeah, the second time that the Lakers make some sort of big change while we are live. So I guess we just kind of keep going live more and more things are going to happen. But he's got the Magic ties and he's been with the Dodgers, I believe, for over a decade. So there's a clear through line now between the Lakers and Dodgers, like there already was, of course, with the Mark Walter hire and him bringing on some advisors. But now there's like a direct actual hired person who has been with the Dodgers and the Lakers. This comes on the heels of the Tim Harris news that he is going to be stepping down. I would say, I don't think this is great for Rob. I don't think this, it does maybe indicate that like at some point here, there could be a change in the next few years, depending on how things go. And there's going to be a lot of, I would say it probably ramps up the pressure on Rob this summer in LA, showing that the like Tim Harris was with the organization for multiple decades, right, and was in the inner circle with Genie, and arguably was like the number two in the organization behind Genie and even ahead of Rob. So the Lakers made a big change there. I still think that Rob is going to have a longer leash than a lot of fans want him to have. And I think that's just the reality of the situation. But this does indicate that Mark Walter is willing to make the difficult decisions that I think the organization is going to need to make to become a top notch, like in that top three, top five organization conversation that several of the same organizations have been in for a while now. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Genie part, like she just did an interview and she said that she's going to be the governor for the next 5 years, again. So I'm not saying that. I don't know what's going to happen there. I'd be lying if I said I know for certain she's going to be the governor for the next 5 years, but that's been all the indications so far. So do you have anything to add?
Yeah, to the only thing I would say is, again, to your point, like this is an organization that's had very little turnover outside of like the head coach. And I think they turned over the head of their medical staff like 2 years ago.
A
couple times. But like there hasn't been turnover in upper management at all. And we're starting to see some of those changes get made. And so I think that that's just a sign that there's more of a willingness to shake things up.
Next one from Tyler K. Thank you for the super chat. How likely are we to steal Peyton Watson from Denver?
I think it's extremely unlikely. I think the chances of pulling him tie entirely to offering an absurd amount of money, which then would not make sense for the Lakers. So I actually do view Tari Eason as like a legitimate target in a way that I don't with Peyton Watson. Like I would just put it that simply. Like if you're looking at Houston and the way that they're going to have to start paying all these guys, and Amen Thompson's probably going to be a full max type of extension, you know, a Shangun's a full max type of player. They've just got a lot of like really high salary type of slots. And I could see a team like the Lakers offering Tari Eason, you know, somewhere in that 20 to 25 range, and Houston being like, all right, fine, he can go. Whereas, you know, a guy like Peyton Watson, you're going to have to offer 35 plus, you know, like I even would look at like, I'd rather pay like a Javonte Green and try to poach him from the Pistons for like 10 million before I would try to pay in the high 30s for a guy that I view as just a role playing starter at this point.
Yeah, for me, it comes down to In terms of the Lakers side, it just comes down to the price and where that's at and what that potential contract looks like. But I'm with you. I think I said it on the show that if we're ranking, I would say that the top three restricted free agents are probably Walker Kessler, Peyton Watson, and Tari Eason. In terms of gettability, I would probably have them Eason, Watson, Kessler. And with Eason, I just think it comes down to Houston can only pay so many guys, and they're about to be on the hook coming up here for the Amen Thompson extension, the Reed Shepherd likely extension. They have Jabari Smith's extension kicking in. And you have this core here of, I think, when they're fully healthy, let's just say like beginning of next season, your starting group is probably going to be Alperen Şengün, Jabari Smith, Kevin Durant, Amen Thompson, and then either Fred VanVleet or Reed Shepherd as your starting point guard. You know, ideally for them, Reed has developed more up to that point. So Tari Eason is more of a sixth, seventh man for them. And with some of the money that's going to be out there this summer, and I think he could be a guy that's in that $18, $20, $22 million range, that's a lot of money to be paying for like a sixth man on a team that could have five or six players who are making 25 plus million already. So I just think he might be a casualty of Houston's depth and cap situation. Whereas Peyton Watson, you could make the same case with Denver and some of their guys, but I think he's going to be a priority for Denver. And it's going to be, can we get off Cam Johnson first and potentially even Christian Brown second? I think Peyton Watson has ascended past him. Now, part of this will come down to how he performs in the playoffs, but then if he doesn't perform well in the playoffs, you also have to wonder, do you want to even pay him 25, 27, 30 million, whatever it ends up being? So I think Tari Eason is a much more gettable guy. I like Watson. He grew up, a big Lakers fan, went to UCLA. So there's also like the LA ties there. But I think realistically, Denver is going to prioritize keeping him, and maybe the Lakers could poach. I mean, I'd love to add a Cam Johnson or Christian Brown.
That's what I was just going to say. Like, I would argue too, when you're talking about, like, let's say when the league year turns over, you know, Cam Johnson is an expiring $23 million. Let's say that Denver ends up re-upping with Peyton on like a 4-year, $120 million deal. So he's making roughly 30 AAV. I think you might be able to pull off getting Cam for like a second round pick and just trading him into cap space. It would be obviously a loss. It'd be a loss for that. It'd be a loss for that Nuggets team to trade a first round pick for Cam and then to lose him for nothing. But if you're a Nuggets fan, none of that matters if Peyton Watson is your small forward of the future. And what you really need is financial flexibility. And so to your point, like, I think if I had to choose between overpaying for Peyton Watson on some massive 4-year deal or getting Cam Johnson on an expiring, you know, like as a guy that could be a placeholder at that starting small forward spot, and maybe it works out great and you re-up with him. You know what I mean? I just think I really like Watson. I would just be really careful about giving him an enormous deal when what the Lakers need are some starting caliber players that are in that like $20 million range.
Next one from DS. Thank you for the super chat. Y'all see the Durant drama.
I straight up don't believe it. I understand the evidence is compelling. Like, I know that these guys that are in these group chats with Kevin are guys that are like known Kevin Durant friends, and it would be kind of strange for a guy to be impersonating Kevin Durant in those chats. And so, like, I understand that it's strange, but like, I frankly refuse to believe that a grown man in his late 30s would behave that way. So like, I am personally a doubter of this. Where do you land?
I believe it now, and what made, so I was like close to believing it, but I, you know, there's been a lot of AI slop lately, and I was like, you could probably program some, you know, an AI to say like, hey, create some DMs that sound like Kevin Durant, right? And I think ChatGPT or Claude or whatever could do that. But then his, what was damning for me was his non-denial at the Rockets practice. Like, it was pretty much like, I just don't want to talk about this. And I was like, okay, well, that's not a denial. Like, if either of us were in that situation and our like DMs leaked or our burner DMs leaked, we would come out and, or I don't know about you, but I would come out and deny that if I didn't do it, right? If it wasn't me, I would be like, hey, this is someone impersonating me, this is AI, this is whatever. And you don't need to like keep denying it, but you need like the strong rebuttal. He didn't, you know, have the strong rebuttal, and that to me was sort of like him sort of acknowledging, yes, this is me, but I don't want to talk about it. And if you guys ask me about it, I'm just going to, sometimes people will come out and be like, I don't want to talk about this in the press conference. And then you still have to ask them it, but like he tried to do that.
Yeah, you're making a compelling case. Again, I see the evidence. I just can't believe that he would act that way. But like, again, maybe I'm just being too altruistic there.
And then next one from Ben, Benjamin G. You've both said two firsts for Herb is steep, so maybe one is heavily protected. Is there an avenue for two unprotected firsts with Vando? And then follow that up with the Claxton trade with the last remaining first. LeBron plays the four for one more year, address two of the three starters this offseason, and get the last next offseason. So he's saying two firsts and Vando for Herb Jones, and then following that up using a first to get Nick Claxton, keeping LeBron, and then you go into next season with a Claxton, LeBron, Herb, Austin, Luka starting group, which I do really like that starting group.
Yeah, so I said this to you on Tuesday. I think like the biggest win for the Lakers would be addressing starting three and starting five, and then convincing LeBron to come back for one more year as a stopgap, because that buys you an additional year to figure out what you want to do with the four spot. However, as you have laid out, it would be extremely difficult for the Lakers to actually pull off using all three of their tradable firsts. And so it's really just about whether or not you can actually afford all of these guys. I do think a first for Claxton is something that's doable. I think getting Herb Jones with one first would be pretty difficult. The one thing that's working in the Lakers' favor there is Herb has extremely cooled off in his shooting. His three-point shot has been bad the last couple of years. He's only 39% from the field this season. And then he's also just not a very good rebounder for his position. So, like, I think that if I'm Rob, I'm going into that conversation like, who do you guys think Herb Jones is? Like, I like Herb Jones. I think that he could start for my team. But why are you guys acting like he's Jaden McDaniels? He's not Jaden McDaniels. Herb Jones is not Jaden McDaniels.
He's also not been healthy. I think that's the biggest indictment of him.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, again, I think if I'm the Lakers, I'm trying to get Herb Jones for cheap if I can.
But yeah, I'm open to that depending on the price. I would assume in this scenario, it would probably have to be the 2026 and then one of the future first for Herb. So I think right now the 2026 is the least valuable because we know it's going to be somewhere between low to mid 20s, whereas the other two have unlimited upside, right? We don't even know what the draft is going to look like in the early 2030s. So I think you'd probably have to pair one of those with the 2026 for Herb and then one of those ones for Claxton. Like, I don't think a late first in this draft is worth Claxton. I think you want some sort of upside that maybe it could be like a mid first or something if you're Brooklyn. But in theory, adding Nick Claxton and Herb Jones, like those might be my two favorite realistic center and wing targets that could be out there. And then, all right, that is it with the Super Chats. So I think we both have to go. I have to go to Lakers practice. Lakers are finally practicing, first time in 2 months that they are practicing. And you have your plans with your friends. So enjoy. Last one here from Kevin Cambridge. I might be going to the game in Miami. I have not decided, but appreciate you all for tuning in. Apologies for the camera issues. We'll get that resolved by next show. It's inexcusable, but this is what happens when Trevor's not here. Things just go off the rails. I had the strong start. I completely collapsed in the fourth quarter here, but Jason, appreciate you. Thank you for your time, and anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
No, it was good to see you, man. Again, we'll be back to, I'm looking forward to getting back to some basketball games starting next week.
Yes, we will be back on Monday. Lakers play Friday night against the Clippers. Stretch Run is here. Appreciate you all. Shout out to the chat, and we'll talk to you all very soon.